Bartimaeus, Chapter 37. Midday, and the shadows were at their smallest. The sky above was eggshell blue, flecked with amiable clouds. The sun shone pleasantly upon the rooftops of the suburb. It was an upbeat hour, all told, a time for honest enterprises and decent work. As if in proof, a few industrious tradesmen passed along the street, wheeling their barrows from house to house. They doffed their caps to old ladies, patted the heads of little children, smiled politely as they introduced their wares. Bargains were struck, goods and money exchanged. The tradesmen strolled away, whistling temperance hymns. Hard to believe that anything wicked was about to happen. Perched in the depths of a tangled elderberry bush, set back from the road, a hunched black form surveyed the scene. It was a mess of bedraggled feathers, with beak and legs protruding as if at random. A medium-sized crow, a bird of ill and unkempt omen. The bird kept its bloodshot eyes trained firmly on the upstairs windows of a large and rambling house at the other end of an overgrown garden. Once again, I was loitering with intent. The thing to remember about this summoning business is that nothing is ever, strictly speaking, your own fault. If a magician binds you to a task, you do it, and quickly, or suffer the shriveling fire. With that kind of injunction hanging over your head, you soon learn to discard any scruples. This means that during the 5,000 years I'd been back and forth across the earth, I'd been unwillingly involved in a good many shabby enterprises. There was the sad overthrow of Akhenaten, for instance. Nefertiti never forgave me for that, but what could I do? Blame the high priests of Ra, not me. Then there was that uncomfortable business of Solomon's magic ring, which one of his rivals charged me to pinch and chuck into the sea. I needed some fast talking on that occasion, I can tell you. Then there were all the other countless assassinations, abductions, thefts, slanders, intrigues, and deceits. Come to think of it, actual bona fide, non-shabby assignments are rather few and far between. Not that I have a conscience, of course, but even we hardened jinn sometimes feel a little soiled by the things we're called upon to do. This, on a small scale, was one such occasion. The crow squatted drably in his tree, keeping other fowl at bay by the simple expedient of letting off a stench. I didn't want any company just then. I shook my beak in mild despondency. Nathaniel! What was there to say? Despite our occasional differences. Well, all right, perpetual. I'd once hoped that he might turn out slightly different from the normal run of magicians. He'd shown a lot of initiative in the past, for instance, and more than a crumb of altruism. It had been barely possible that he might follow his own path through life, and not just go down the old power, wealth, notoriety road that every one of his fellows chose. But had he? Nope. The signs now were worse than ever. Perhaps still unsettled by witnessing the demise of his colleague Tallow, my master had been curt to the point of rudeness when he summoned me that morning. He was at his palest and most taciturn. No friendly conversation for me, no tactful pleasantries. I received no further praise for my dispatch of the renegade Afreet the night before, and, despite changing into a few beguiling female shapes, didn't get a single rise out of him. What I did get was a prompt new task, of the sort that fits squarely into the nasty and regrettable category. It was a new departure for Nathaniel, the first time he'd sunk to these depths, and I must admit it surprised me. But a charge is a charge. So here I was, an hour or two later, loitering in a bush in Balham. Part of my instructions was to keep the whole thing as quiet as possible, which was why I didn't just bust my way through the ceiling. I rejected this procedure on aesthetic grounds also. I dislike leaving a mess. I knew my prey was home, and probably upstairs, so I waited with my little beady eyes fixed upon the windows. No magician's house this. Peeling paint, rotting window frames, weeds growing through holes in the tiled porch. A sizable property, yes, but unkempt and a little sad. There were even a few rusting children's toys buried in the foot-high grass. After an hour or more of immobility, the crow was getting twitchy. Although my master had wanted discretion, he had also wanted speed. Before long, I would have to stop dallying and get the business over with. But ideally, I wanted to wait until the house had emptied and my victim was alone. As if in answer to this need, the front door suddenly opened, and a large and formidable woman sailed forth, clutching a canvas shopping bag. She passed directly beneath me and headed off down the street. I didn't bother trying to hide. To her, I was just a bird. There were no nexuses, no magical defences, no signs that anyone here could see beyond the first plane. It was hardly a proper test of my powers, in other words. The whole mission was sordid from beginning to end. Then a movement in one window. A patch of dusty grey net curtains was shoved aside, and a skinny arm reached through to unlatch the clasp and shove the casement up. This was my cue. The crow took off and fluttered up the garden, like a pair of black underpants blown upon the wind. It landed on the sill of the window in question, and with a shuffle of its scaly legs, inched along the dirty net curtains until it located a small vertical tear. The crow shoved its head through and took a look inside. The room's primary purpose was evident from the bed shoved up against the far wall. A rumpled duvet indicated that it had recently been occupied. But the bed was now half obscured by a colossal number of small wooden trays, each one subdivided into compartments. Some held semi-precious stones. Agate, topaz, opal, garnet, jade, and amber, all shaped, polished, and graded by size. Others held strips of thin metal, or wisps of carved ivory, or triangular pieces of coloured fabric. All along one side of the room, a rough worktop had been erected, and this was covered by further trays, together with racks of slender tools and pots of foul-smelling glue. In one corner, carefully stacked and labelled, sat a pile of books with new plain leather bindings of a dozen colours. Pencil marks on the bindings indicated where ornamentation was to be added, and in the centre of the desk, bathed in a pool of light from two standing lamps, one such operation was in progress. A fat volume in brown crocodile skin was having a star pattern of tiny red garnets added to its front cover. As the crow on the windowsill watched, the final gem had a blob of glue applied to its underside and was set in place by a pair of tweezers. Deeply engaged in this work, and thus oblivious to my presence, was the youth I had come to find. He wore a rather worn-looking dressing-gown and a pair of faded blue pyjamas. His feet, which were crossed under his stool, were encased in a huge pair of stripy bed-socks. His black hair was long, down to his shoulders, and on a split hair's general grease rating put even Nathaniel's noxious mane in the shade. The atmosphere of the room was heavy with leather, glue, and odour of boy. Well, this was it. No time like the present, etc. Time to do the deed. The crow gave a sigh, took hold of the net curtain in its beak, and with one quick motion of the head, ripped the fabric in two. I stepped through onto the inner sill and hopped onto the nearest stack of books, just as the boy looked up from his work. He was very out of shape. The flesh hung heavily on him, and his eyes were tired. He caught sight of the crow and ran one hand through his hair in a distracted sort of way. A fleeting look of panic passed across his face, then dulled into resignation. He set down his tweezers on the desk. "What manner of demon are you?" he said. The crow was taken aback. "You wearing lenses or something?" The boy shrugged wearily. "My grandmama always said demons came as crows, and normal birds don't slice their way through curtains, do they?" This last bit was admittedly true. "Well, if you must know," I said, "I am a jinni of great antiquity and power. I have spoken with Solomon and Ptolemy, and hunted down the sea peoples in the company of kings. Currently, however, I am a crow. But enough about me." I adopted a more efficient, business-like tone. "You are the commoner, Jacob Herneck?" A nod. "Good. Then prepare. I know who sent you." "Ah, you do?" I've guessed this was coming for a long time. The crow blinked in surprise. "Blimey! I only found out this morning." "It makes sense. He's decided to finish the job." The boy shoved his hands deep into his dressing-gown pockets and sighed feelingly. I was confused. "He has? What job was this?" Listen, stop sighing like a girl and explain yourself.
Killing me, of course,
Herneck said. I assume you're a more efficient demon than the last one. Although I have to admit he looked a lot more scary. You're a bit drab and weedy and small.
Just hold hard a moment.
The crow rubbed its eyes with a wingtip. There's some mistake here. My master never heard of your existence until yesterday. He told me so. It was the boy's turn to do the perplexed bit.
Why would Tallow say that? Is he mad?
Tallow?
The crow was practically cross-eyed with befuddlement.
Slow down. What's he got to do with it?
He sent the green monkey after me, of course, so I naturally assumed.
I held up a wing. Let's start again. I have been sent to find Jacob Herneck at this address. Jacob Herneck is you, correct? Right. So far, so good. Now, I know nothing about any green monkey, and let me tell you, incidentally, that looks aren't everything. I may not seem much at present, but I'm a good deal more vicious than I appear.
The boy nodded sadly. I thought you might be.
Too right, Buster. I'm nastier than any monkey you're likely to come across, that's for sure.
Now, where was I? I've lost my thread.
Oh, yes. I know nothing about the monkey, and I certainly haven't been summoned by Tallow, which would be impossible in any case.
Why?
Because he was swallowed by an afreet last night. But that's by the by.
Not to the boy, it wasn't. At this news, his face lit up, his eyes widened, his mouth curved up and outwards in a long, slow smile. His whole body, which had been slumped over his stool like a sack of cement, suddenly began to straighten and gain new life. His fingers gripped the edge of the desk so hard the knuckles cracked.
"'He's dead? You're sure?'
"'Saw it with these eyes. Well, not these ones, exactly. I was a serpent at the time.'
"'How did it happen?'
He seemed uncommonly interested. "'A summoning went wrong. The fool misread the words or something.' Herneck's grin broadened.
"'He was reading from a book?'
"'A book, yes. That's generally where incantations are to be found.' Now, can we please get back to the business in hand? I haven't got all day.
All right,
but I'm very grateful to you for the information. The boy did his best to compose himself, but kept grinning inanely and breaking into little chuckles. It really put me off my stride.
Look, I'm trying to be serious here. I warn you to take heed. Oh, hell!
The crow had taken a menacing step forwards and stuck his foot into a glue pot. After a couple of tries, I managed to shake it off across the room and began to scrape my toes clean against the corner of a wooden tray.
"'Now listen,' I snarled as I scraped. "'I've come here not to kill you, as you surmised, but to take you away, and I advise you not to resist.'
That knocked some sense into him.
"'Take me away? Where?'
"'You'll see. Do you want to get dressed? I can spare you a little time.'
"'No. No, I can't.'
All of a sudden he was upset, rubbing at his face and scratching at his hands. I tried to be reassuring.
"'I won't try to harm you.
But I never go out. Never.
You have no choice, sonny. Now, how about a pair of trousers? Those pajama bottoms look loose, and I fly at speed.
Please.
He was desperate, pleading.
I never go out. I haven't done so for 3 years. Look at me. Look at me. See?
I looked at him blankly. What?
So you're a bit podgy. There's worse than you out there walking the streets, and you'd solve the problem fast enough if you did some exercise instead of sitting on your backside here.
Embossing spellbooks in your bedroom is no life for a growing boy. It'll pay hell with your eyesight, too.
No, my skin and my hands. Look at them. I'm hideous.
He was yelling now, thrusting his hands towards my beak and flicking his hair back from his face.
I'm sorry. I don't... That colouring, of course. Look at it. All over me.
And sure enough, now he came to mention it, I did see a series of vertical grey-black bands running up and down his face and across the back of his hands.
Oh, that,
I said. What of it? I thought you'd done that intentionally. Herneck gave a sort of silly, sobbing laugh at this, the kind that implies far too much time spent maundering in solitude. I didn't allow him time to speak. That's a black tumbler, isn't it? I went on. Well, the Banja people of Great Zimbabwe used to use that, among other spells, to make themselves look more attractive. It was considered very becoming for a young bridegroom to have a full body coat of stripes before the wedding. And the women went in for it too, on a more localized basis. Only the wealthy could afford it, of course, as the sorcerers charged the earth. Anyway, from their point of view, you look extremely eligible. I paused. Except for your hair, which is pretty bad. But so's my master's, and it doesn't stop him flouncing about in broad daylight. Now then, amid all of that, I thought I'd heard a door slam somewhere in the house. It's time to go. No time for trousers, I fear. You'll have to chance your luck with the updrafts. I gave a hop along the desk. The boy slipped off his seat in sudden panic and began to back away.
No, leave me alone.
Sorry, can't be done. He was making too much noise. I could sense movement in a room below. Don't blame me, I haven't got any choice. The crow jumped off onto the floor and began to change, swelling to ominous size. The boy screamed, turned, and flung himself at the door. An answering shout came from beyond it. It sounded maternal. I heard heavy feet hurrying up the stairs. Jacob Herneck wrestled with the handle, but never completed a single twist. A giant gold beak descended on the collar of his dressing gown. Steel claws rotated in the carpet, slicing up the boards beneath. He was swung up and round like a helpless cub dangling in its mother's jaws. Mighty wings flapped once, overturning trays and sending gemstones pattering against the walls. A rush of wind, the boy was launched towards the window. A wing of scarlet feathers rose up to enclose him. Glass shattered all around, cold air buffeted his body. He cried out, flailed wildly, and was gone. Anyone arriving at the gaping wall behind us would have seen nothing, heard nothing, except, perhaps, the shadow of a great bird flitting across the grass, and some distant screams ascending into the sky.